Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and this is Bonnie Kay for the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my co-hostess Misty Hall and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So, good evening to you, Misty, on this holiday weekend.
Good evening, Bonnie. How are you?
And I know it's very, very hot here in Philadelphia. How about in Florida?
Well, we won't even talk about how hot it is down here. It's probably even hotter than hot in Philadelphia. Wow.
Yeah, I guess it is. That's why I'm not there. It's bad enough here. And I think my heart goes out to everybody in this country. The weather's just been so horrible, and the tornadoes and things going on like I've never seen before. I don't think in my whole lifetime it's been more weather tragedy this year.
You know, I don't want very much TV, and I, you know, every time you turn it on, there's a tragedy in some part of the country, and it's terrible. My heart goes out to everyone.
Terrible. And we want to welcome all of our listeners, and thank you for listening to our show. If you would like to call in this evening, I'm going to give you our call-in number. We're always happy to hear from our listeners and from people who have questions that they would like answers and clarity to. So our number for the guest call-in is area code 646-716-4893. And I'll repeat that again. It's area code 646-716-4893. And Misty, I just want to let our listeners know that next week we're going to be having Dr. Lauren Olson come back, who unfortunately was cut off due to our technical problems 2 weeks ago. And Dr. Olson wrote a book called Finally Out, Letting Go of Living Straight. He's a psychiatrist who lives in the Midwest. And I'll read you a little excerpt from his book, what it's about, in case anybody's interested in getting the book before he does come on. And it says that Dr. Lauren Olson has frequently been asked two questions. How could you not know you were gay until the age of 40? Wasn't your marriage just a sham to protect yourself at your wife's expense? And Finally Out, Dr. Olson vigorously answers both of these questions by telling the inspiring story of his evolving sexuality, into which he intelligently weaves psychological concepts and gay history. This book is a powerful exploration of human sexuality, particularly the sexuality of mature men who, like Dr. Olson, live a large part of their lives as straight men, sometimes long after becoming aware of their same-sex attractions. And it says that Dr. Olson is a gay psychiatrist who came out at 40. A father and grandfather, he is also a Distinguished Life Fellow of the American Psychiatric Association and a recipient of the Exemplary Psychiatrist Award from the National Alliance on Mental Illness. He has presented findings from his research on mature gay men at the World Congress of Psychiatry in Prague. In 2009, Dr. Olson legally married Doug Mortimer, his partner of 24 years. They live on a farm in Iowa, where they produce grass-fed beef from their herd of belted Galloway cattle. So that's interesting, right?
It is.
I'm not sure about the cattle, but, you know, his story is definitely interesting. And in reading his book, you know, I thought it was interesting because, you know, it reminded me of so many of the stories of the men who write in the new book that I just had come out this week with Doug Dittmer. And that book is called Over the Cliff, Gay Men and Straight Marriages. And that book is definitely a need-to-be-read book by every wife who is married to a gay man and every husband who hasn't been able to come out to his wife yet or who's thinking of coming out or who needs to do the right thing. And, you know, like I say, the story that these men go through are very compelling. And I think that, you know, I wanted to just read a little bit from his book because I think it's really interesting that so many women who find themselves in this situation who really, you know, are so distraught over it, and understandably since you and I have both been there. But in most cases, I don't believe in my heart, in most cases, not all, but most cases, that these men intentionally married us knowing they were gay or understanding their homosexuality. And I think in a lot of cases, they really didn't understand it. And I think that after reading, you know, Lauren's book, that certainly gave me a better understanding of the thinking of these, you know, men. And I think it would do that for every woman in the sense that it doesn't excuse behaviors, because believe me, I'm not looking to make excuses for anyone. I'm just looking for understanding. And I think that's, you know, really what this is about, that, you know, how these men have a need to repress their inner contradictions, you know, because they just don't understand. You know, like, for instance, he says here, how could you not know is much more difficult to answer. Probing for an answer is ultimately what led to this book. All memories are all but reconstructions, but what I can affirm without qualification or reservation is that until I was 40, I had no idea I was gay. Before that, I suffered from a sense that things weren't right inside me. It seemed that I had to work harder to feel like a man than other men appear to, but I could never speak of my confused feelings to anyone. I believe that my father's death when I was 3 years old had crippled me. It was as if his death created a negative space around me, like the optical illusion of Rubens' gauze. Was I really a man, or just the illusion of one defined by that negative space around me? And he said, that need for harmony in our thinking is why men like me, who experience a significant conflict between their rational thought, men should love women, and their feeling thought, I am attracted to men, search for a way to find accord in our thoughts, deceiving ourselves about our sexual attractions. To protect ourselves from unacceptable feelings, we instinctively erect barricades in our brains so that we may hoodwink ourselves into absolute assurances that we are heterosexual. In the process, we unknowingly perpetrate a hoax on our spouses, our children, and everyone we know. If that partition develops even a small crack, it is not a fissure that enlightens our conscious minds. It is a fault line in its darkening lens we've constructed that blocks the blinding light of unwanted feelings. He said, in high school, I became captivated with the idea of becoming a flight attendant, with flight being an important word. On domestic airlines in the 1960s, flight attendants were young, beautiful women called stewardesses. Men were only hired as stewards on international flights, and the airlines required fluency in a foreign language. My 1 year of poorly taught high school Spanish did not qualify me for the job. Looking back, I can see that this, too, was the unconscious operations of my mind pushing me to break free of the fences created by my traditional upbringing to explore the world that lay beyond Nebraska's prairies. And, you know, he talks about, you know, how he really didn't understand what he was. And I think in, you know, many cases with these men that, you know, the long sense of denial or not wanting to be gay or being able to fall in love with a woman or being told that this is what you're supposed to do, you know, I think that you and I are really sympathetic to that.
Yes.
It's just that at some point, you know, things seem to lose their perspective. And, you know, what I think a lot of women could really be much more understanding and forgiving if a lot of these men would be much more responsible, you know, at the end of it.
Yeah, and I think it's also honest at the end of it, you know, before they reach out and start going into other relationships, male relationships.
They would have to absolutely. I think
some
that
do.
Honesty.
Some do.
Yeah, some do, absolutely. But a lot of them don't. And, you know, that's the problem, that they have to step up to the occasion. And, in fact, I received a really compelling letter today from one of my support group members, and I'm going to read the letter. I'm going to have it in my July newsletter. And I thought it was really interesting because she bought the new book, and I think this new book is really revolutionary. You know, first of all, it's the first book that I know of that deals with men's issues of coming out as a group of men. And I'm really, like, impressed with the fact that so many men were willing to share and to be honest about, you know, their lives and, you know, what they've been through and what their thoughts are. And I know it's going to really help the women in many cases more so than the men because, you know, any women who are on the fence or who aren't sure or who wonder what they did to contribute to the downfall of their marriage, after they read this, you know, they're going to be really clear that it was nothing to do with them, as the men say. It really has nothing to do with you. It's about them. But here was a letter I received from a woman today. And she wrote, Dear Bonnie, thank you for writing the book Over the Cliff. I'm an ex-spouse of a gay man married for 11 years. Even after 5 years of no contact, I found this book to be helpful with my own grieving process. I definitely appreciate the honesty of these men, and I'm grateful for them for their candor. However, I feel the need to speak my truth and let the men know many of these women were feeling the same way as them, but these men were self-involved and didn't even recognize it. During my marriage, I was not sexually fulfilled in any way. He pursued me heavily for 2 years prior, and I was a virgin when we consummated the relationship on our wedding night. I did everything in my power to make our relationship work, single counseling, couples counseling, spiritual counseling, nothing helped. I felt trapped in a relationship of his making. I couldn't find a solution to the problem because his truth of being gay was withheld from me. This is fraud, a legal crime, but nothing happened to him. No fine, no punishment. I find it so ironic that these men say they were trapped. First of all, no woman asked the man to marry her. These men pursued each of their wives, and then withheld the truth every day that they were married. In my book, this is rape. I wouldn't have had sex with him if we wouldn't have been married. And I wouldn't have married him if I would have known he was gay. And through a state annulment, he acknowledged he withheld this information from me intentionally, but I only found out after 13 years of being in a relationship with him. Talk about a prison sentence. I felt trapped in a loveless marriage, a prison sentence. I wanted out, but my religious convictions and my husband's would not validate my feelings or needs. He played the crowd, telling everyone how much he loved me. He bought me gifts. He showed everyone how wonderful he was. It was the worst kind of abuse. No one would validate my concerns. I needed to be loved by a man, desired and held, but all he did was think about himself and his social pressures, never concerning himself with my needs and the anguish and psychological suffering he was causing me. One man stated that his wife is not his friend and never will be. I found his answer to be very honest, and I appreciate it. However, I also realize he objectified his wife and still does. He took an innocent love and made her feel the rage, frustration, anger, hatred, and resentment inside of him and victimized her in order to feel powerful. He's right, she will never be his friend because he only sees her as an object and not as a woman with feelings, love, and compassion. This is something he should probably work on as a human being, not just as a gay man. These men also talked about how it wasn't all about you, meaning it wasn't all about the wife, and the wife needs to let go. Here is my take. Once a woman has devoted 11 years of her life to a man she believes is straight, she really isn't interested in starting over just because he's saying he's gay. After 11 years, gay was the least of my concerns. I'd already been manipulated, put down, verbally abused, financially abused, told I was a nymphomaniac, and physically abused. Honestly, he proved to me daily that I was unloved, but there was no escaping. If I cheated on him, then I was a slut. If I divorced him, then my parents would not forgive me for leaving a great guy. Now, he says he's gay. Great. For me, this was a blessing. Finally, I had the opportunity to think about myself and my future and not worry about him. Not only did I lose the love and the time I invested in my relationship, I lost my home, my savings, and my reproductive years. I became a recluse for the shame and abuse I endured. And even with a doctorate degree, it took me 2 years to find a job, and it wasn't even in my area of study. Once again, I appreciate the honesty of all these men, and I like the book, but nothing will justify these men's actions. Personally, I think they are selfish bastards and deserve to rot in hell, not for being gay, but for going above and beyond the area of selfishness that warrants a crime. I'm glad these men are out and free, but they should have been living with integrity from the beginning. And once they began cheating, they should have communicated honestly with their wives. As one man said, if I just throw her out, what does that say about me? I think he is exactly right. For those men who were as evil as my ex-husband, it proves that coming out is just one thing, and having integrity while coming out is just another. Thanks for all you do. So what do you think of that?
Wow. I think that story is going to hit home to a lot of women that are listening tonight. I'm sure they can find threads of commonality between their story and the story of the writer that just wrote you that letter. And, you know, it's true. It's not just, it's not a hatred towards someone being gay. It's not anything such as that. I think the hurt comes into play when, you know, you do feel like a prisoner. You feel like you've, you know, that part of your life has been completely taken. You've been given a sentence without any judge or jury because you didn't know. That part of your life was taken away from you. And especially when you throw in there, she said, her reproductive years. So, I mean, you know, she's got several losses. It's not just a loss of what she thought was in a marriage. It's a loss of what the future could have been. It's a loss of what could have been if she would have chose someone else if he hadn't pursued her. Because, you know,
well, that's what I think a lot of people feel. And I think, you know, it's really true. Like when women say to me, well, you know, I had a horrible marriage, but at least I have my beautiful children. And, you know, I say to them, well, you could have had beautiful children and still had a beautiful marriage with someone else. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not negating the fact that you have wonderful children. But I don't think that, you know, as I wrote in my last newsletter, I don't think that we had intended to be single parents when we got married. That wasn't our goal. You know, we married in good intentions of raising our children and having a family, you know, and walking down the aisle hand in hand together, you know, as husband and wife would be doing, you know, while our children were getting married, not to have to end up as, you know, single parents or living in a household where there's constant turmoil going on or constantly being put down or made to feel insignificant. And even with good gay husbands, like, for instance, I'm working with a gay man right now who's a husband, and he's a doll. I mean, he's really a sweetheart. I can't say enough nice things about him. He loves his family dearly. He hasn't had sex with his wife in many years, but, you know, he really does love his family. And he just can't, he's getting ready to, you know, come out and be honest with her because I've really been working with him on the need to do this. And, you know, he finally told his wife a few months ago that he's going for therapy. And I said, well, make sure you tell her that it has nothing to do with her. It's your own personal issues from growing up. Because I don't want her thinking that in any way that she's responsible for his unhappiness. It's bad enough he hasn't told her the truth yet. And, you know, here's a guy who's really a good guy, and I keep telling him part of being a good guy is being honest.
Yes.
You know, it's not just enough to be a nice guy and be, you know, it's good to be emotionally and want to be financially responsible to your family, which, you know, you should be. But, you know, telling the truth is the most important thing that you can do to someone. And I don't think that of all the women that you and I have both worked with, I mean, you can tell me if you think I'm wrong, that when you talk to them, all of them would agree that if there's one thing they would like, it's the truth. Wouldn't you say so?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what, you know, all the women ask for is the truth. I think they can have better closure on the relationship when they get the truth because their mind doesn't wander. When you don't get the truth, I think it's human. Humans try to find different answers. It's just human nature. So we'll make up answers sometimes that are so far out in left field, it impedes the process of the healing because you'll just keep finding different answers. Well, you know, well, what if it was me that did this? What if I caused that? What if I caused this? And you're creating all those answers and suggestions in your own mind because you don't have the truth. When you get
well,
the truth.
Well, that's part of it. That's part of it, Misty, and I think that, you know, you're absolutely right with what you say. So how do you respond, like, when a guy says to you, you know, a gay husband, well, my wife knows the truth, and I say, well, have you discussed it with her? And he'll say, no, but she knows. Okay, how does she know? Well, she found gay porno on my computer. She knows. So what do you say to him at that point?
I say that's not true, that she doesn't know. I say you have to sit down and talk with the wife to make sure she knows here's why. Oftentimes, a lot of these women I've worked with, a lot of women you've worked with, have gone to therapists and different counselors and spoken to people that they brought this up to the therapist or counselor, and they said, oh, well, you know, the wife goes in, she gets the nerve to go into an appointment, make an appointment, and she says, okay, I found gay porn on my husband's computer. Oftentimes, that professional, that mental health professional will tell that client, well, what's the big deal? You know, that could be normal curiosity. So
yeah,
that
what's the story with that?
Well, yeah, we hear, how many times do we hear that? And that person's going to think, well, maybe it's just me, I'm crazy. And they're just going to throw her right back into the circle of dancing inside crazy. You know, because she's going to think it's her. She's going to blame this issue on her once again. And to the man that says, my wife knows she found the gay porn, I don't think that's accurate that she knows. I think you need to
follow up. I don't think you can let it go like that. I really don't.
No, absolutely not.
You know, that's not good enough.
No, not at all.
Yeah, you can't make these assumptions.
No, because it's like, you know, this story goes over and over in a straight wife's mind how she could be doing something different. All the while, she doesn't have all the information to base on what she should be doing because she's not been given the information. So how does she know?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I just think it's, you know, like I say, it's just you have to be honest about it. You have to tell them about it. And, you know, honesty really can be a real tiebreaker here as far as how a relationship continues in the future. That if you have children and you're looking to cement that relationship, you know, you need to be honest. You need to sit down and say, look, this is the way it is. You know, I'm really sorry. What can we do to try to make this better for the future? You know, I can't help being what I am. This is what I am. And, you know, I'm sorry that I withheld it from you, but I didn't want to hurt you. I wasn't sure. But you need to get that truth out there. You can't just be sitting on it and thinking that, you know, look, some of these men in this book wrote, you know, they just didn't want to hurt their wives, so they kept sitting on this news because they were afraid of hurting their family. You know, I understand that's normal fear, but you just don't understand what it's doing to, like I said to this guy who I'm working with, I said, what do you think your wife is thinking? You haven't touched her in all these years. Don't you think she thinks this is an issue or a problem? So, of course, you know, he says, well, you're right, but I tell her I'm depressed. You know, and a lot of these guys, that's why I put it on my checklist, you know, on my website at gayhusbands.com, that one of the signs, if you're not having sex and your husband has to keep telling you he's too depressed to have sex, I see that from a lot of men. They use that as their an excuse, you know, why they're not having sex with their wives. And that leads me to the next thing I wanted to talk to you about, Misty, that I was going through, you know, the internet, looking up some stuff. And there's a men's therapist out there called Joe Court. And some of you are familiar with him. Some of you have read some of the stuff that, you know, he's talked about. And, you know, Joe Court tries to justify to some men that they're really not gay, that, you know, even if they've had gay sex, you know, that doesn't necessarily make them gay, that they can be married and having sex with men, and that doesn't necessarily still mean that they're gay. And, you know, of course, I take a very different point of view than Joe Court takes, but I read this article, and I sent it to you, Misty, and it really disturbed me. And this was written, you know, a couple years ago when Brokeback Mountain came out. And I guess, I don't know how I missed it back then, but I did, or maybe I read it and I try to forget about it. But I just want to read this article. It says, 1 hour into Brokeback Mountain, Amy Jo Remily begins to cry, not just for the woman on screen who was standing in the doorway of Riverton, Wyoming, watching her husband embrace a man. When I saw that look in her eyes, I thought, oh, yeah, even though I never saw my husband with another man, I knew exactly how that woman would feel, says Remily, a respiratory therapist in rural Minnesota. On June 1st, 2000, Remily, then 31, discovered her husband's profile on the website gay.com. The couple stayed up all that night weeping and talking. Soon afterward, 10 days before she gave birth to her second child, Remily's husband went off to spend a couple of nights with his new boyfriend. I tried to talk him out of it, and he left anyway, Remily says. I was devastated. 3 months later, the couple divorced. Remily, now married to a farmer who raises cattle and corn and soybeans, is one of an estimated 1.7 million to 3.4 million American women who were once or are now married to men who have sex with men. The estimate derives from the Social Organization of Sexuality, a 1990 study that found out that 3.9% of American men who had ever been married had sex with men in the previous 5 years. Then it says such marriages are not artifacts of the closet in 1950s, and it goes on to some history of them with some famous people, such as, you know, Oscar Wilde, Rock Hudson, Cole Porter, Elton John, and James McGreevy, the former governor of New Jersey. It says, on the whole, these marriages of these are not marriages of convenience or cynical efforts to create cover. Gay and bisexual men continue to marry for complex reasons, many impelled not only by discrimination, but also by wishful thinking, the layered ambiguities of sexual love and authentic affection. Now, this Joe Court, who's a clinical social worker in Rogue Oil, you know, in Michigan, said these men genuinely love their wives, and he's counseled hundreds of gay men, including a minority who stay in their marriages. Many, he says, consider themselves heterosexual men with homosexual urges that they hope to confine to their private fantasy life. They fall in love with their wives, and they have children, they're on chemical romantic high, and then after about 7 years, the high falls away and their gay identity starts emerging, Court says. They don't even mean any harm. And a little further down in the article, this is what, you know, just caught my attention. It says, Court, however, says that women should look deeper. Straight people rarely marry gay people accidentally, he wrote in a case study of mixed orientation marriage, published last September in Psychotherapy Networker, a magazine for which this reporter is the feature editor. Some women, Court say, find gay men less judgmental and more flexible, while others unconsciously seek partnerships that are not sexually passionate. So, what do you think of that, Misty?
Well, I think in my case, that doesn't apply. I think I married someone because they pursued me. I don't think it was because I knew he was gay or because I thought he had some kind of urges to be with men, because I certainly would have not married him. So I wouldn't consider on my part that it was done on purpose whatsoever. And that sounds like that's what that article alludes to, that, you know, we, you know, some women have chosen to marry because he's saying it's been no accident.
I mean, I find that extremely insulting. I really do.
Yeah, I think that's insulting to a lot of women. I mean, I know people, I do know people that are, both partners are gay, you know, gay and or lesbian, and married. They've had an arrangement beforehand because they wanted
to
have children.
That's a different situation.
That's what I'm going to say. That's completely different. I'm not including that. I'm talking about the women I work with. I'm talking about my personal experience. No, I would have never married my ex if he would have told me, revealed his truth to me of who he was.
Well, luckily, the next comment comes from a Michelle Wiener Davis, a marriage therapist and author, and she said, that's psychobabble. A lot of gay people don't know they're gay, so how in the world are their spouses supposed to have some sort of gaydar? And she continues, a therapist should deal with the real issues, the shock to her system, that her husband wasn't who he thought he was, and the impact on her own identity. And, you know, I think that's a more realistic thing. But what I found interesting in this article also is that it says some marriages survive, that about two-thirds of the women who contact the International Straight Spouse Network in California eventually divorce, as Amity Pierce Buxton, 77, retired school administrator, who started the Straight Spouse Network. And despite their shock and anger, many women, especially those criticized by gay husbands for being too sexually demanding, are relieved to find out what was wrong. The remaining third of those she has studied try to preserve their marriages, Buxton says. Half of those stay married for 3 years or more. More than 600 such couples belong to online support groups. In the 2001 study published by the Journal of Bisexuality, 137 still married gay and bisexual men and their wives. Buxton found that most lived in the suburbs in medium-sized cities and had been married for 11 to 30 years. Only tiny percentages lived in rural areas where family privacy may be harder to maintain. The survival of even a small minority of these marriages calls into question the conceptual shoeboxes into which human partnerships, affection, attraction, commitment, and sexuality are often jammed. Describing their permutations and combinations turns out to be much more complicated than checking a box on a form labeled gay, bisexual, or straight. And, but, you know, like I say, this is, you know, from her statistics, I really don't think that many marriages stay together, and certainly not a third of them, you know, once the news comes out. And if they do right now, it's only due to financial, you know, circumstances. I don't meet too many women who are trying to make these marriages work, although I do have some of them come to me who really want to stay in these marriages because they can't even think about leaving them. And I do send them to the Straight Spouse Network because they do have their own support network for women who want to stay in marriages to gay men. And I just can't have that kind of network because I can't. I don't believe in it. I believe it's destructive, and I really wouldn't feel, you know, have a good conscience about encouraging something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you don't either, right?
I just don't see how it can be viable. I mean, I tried it myself, and I became more damaged. I became more damaged. The marriage became more abusive. Once I got an inkling of what was going on, I tried to believe him when he said, you know, when he told me different stories. I tried to believe him, and, you know, it was just so abusive in many different ways, not just emotionally and mentally and physically, because, you know, I also experienced domestic violence in my marriage. You know, even putting that aside, you know, put the domestic violence aside, just the damage being done remaining married to someone that you think that's gay or bisexual, it's not a pretty picture. I mean, there's just a lot of repairs that need to be made, and I could certainly not imagine where I would be today if I were to be in marriage. I don't know if I'd be alive today, quite honestly.
Well, all I can say is that, you know, I keep telling women this. In fact, I'm going to add this to my website. I spoke with my web person yesterday that the top of my website, sometime in the next week or two, I'm going to have her put in big letters my mantra, that life was never meant to be this complicated. And I think women just have to keep saying that over and over again to themselves. Life was not meant to be this complicated. And, you know, this is not what life is about. And people laugh at me when they say, well, you're watching those romantic stories on the movies, and that's not what real life is. Well, guess what? It is for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know a lot of straight people who have amazing marriages. I mean, they are like that. When you see people walking together hand in hand and hugging and kissing each other, and, I mean, they don't have to be 20 years old. I mean, you know, my boyfriend and I are still very affectionate. We hold each other and kiss each other. There's a lot of passion there. There's also a lot of affection there. And, I mean, we're like old people. So you can't tell me that this is not the way, you know, straight people are supposed to act, because they are. And the one thing I see, though, with straight people where it's different than straight gay marriages is that when it stops being there, people don't have to sit and, you know, internalize, should I get out of this relationship? 50% of all marriages end in divorce, and these are straight people, because the marriages just aren't working for them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have to sit and justify, you know, and think and rethink 100 times over, should I do this? What are people going to say? How are people going to view me? You know, I think that our straight wives married to gay men, now you can tell me your opinion on this, Misty, because if I'm overstating this, you know, you can be honest about it. But I think because we doubt ourselves so much, you know, staying in these marriages that are really, you know, destructive to our mental health, that we second-guess everything that we're doing, questioning it over and above and aboard what anybody else would be doing if they had a straight husband. You know, I don't see that straight women keep questioning themselves, how's this going to impact, what are people going to say? People are going to worry that, you know, I walked away from a good guy. I mean, how do you feel on that?
I think you just explained it. That's why I came up with the phrase, you know, dancing inside the circle of crazy. I danced so hard inside the circle of crazy. Every time something new came along, I would try to conform. Whatever, you know, the new flavor of the week was, or the new thing of the week he said that was wrong with me, I tried to conform. I tried to fix it. So, you know, I danced inside that circle of crazy just an inordinate amount of time. It was ridiculous. But once you get so broken, you know, once you get so broken down mentally and physically, and, you know, you're exhausted. You know, you start internalizing these things and thinking it's your fault. So once you get to that point, you're not apt to be strong enough to take back your own power and to walk out and to say, you know, to cut off, you know, when is enough enough? You're not apt to do that because you're just so broken. You're automatically assuming a lot of these things are your fault because you've come accustomed to internalizing it, when in fact you shouldn't internalize it. And absolutely, yes, I think straight women married to gay men do internalize things more, place a lot of the blame on themselves, when in fact they're not the correct gender for their partner, for their husband anymore.
Well, I think that's because so many of their husbands internalize their unhappiness and place the blame with the wives. I mean, maybe intentionally, and once again, I don't think a lot of these guys are really intentionally trying to hurt their wives, but they are unhappy and they do feel trapped. And so who are they going to strike out at? Naturally, they're going to strike out at the person who they feel trapped by. And even though, like one woman, you know, said to me, I didn't trap my husband. He asked me to marry him. I didn't ask him to marry me, you know. And I've heard that from so many women, like, how am I trapping them? You know, they asked me to get married. And I know that my ex-husband used to talk about it a lot, you know, how he felt trapped in the marriage. And I never quite understood it. I thought, you know, you asked me to marry you. You wanted to have a married life with a family. You know, I've done everything possible to make you happy. How is it you're feeling trapped? And, like, he couldn't articulate it because, of course, you know, he didn't want to tell me how he felt trapped. But I think in a lot of cases they don't even understand themselves yet because they haven't come to terms with their homosexuality. But the bottom line is that when you're living with somebody who's making you feel inadequate, and that's how you start to feel, that no matter what you're doing, you know, you're not doing something right because your husbands aren't happy, then you start doubting everything. I mean, that's what I think starts down that real big meltdown of your own self-esteem, and throw in some sexual rejection with that, you know, that starts stripping away your sexual esteem. So after a while, I think you just start doubting yourself with everything.
Absolutely.
Would you say that's pretty much true?
Absolutely. You know, I've always been a creative person all my life, an artist all my life as well as professionally, you know, being an expressive art therapist and a mental health therapist. But I've always loved anything to do with art. I remember when I was going through those rough years. You know, the roughest years were probably the last 3 years of the marriage. Those were just horrible, horrible years. And I was completely miserable. Number one, I had quit doing art whatsoever. I didn't even know what to do artistically anymore or to be creative anymore. And number two, by the time I got divorced, I couldn't even tell you what my favorite color was. I mean, that's pretty sad when you consider yourself an artist. I don't even know what my favorite color was anymore. I mean, it just completely strips you down to where, you know, you don't even know who you are anymore. It's like an empty shell walking around.
And then I know I have so many unbelievable artists that were within, you know, within our network, and how many of them have told me, you know, through the years when they would do this beautiful work and create this beautiful work that their husbands would tell them, why are you wasting your time on that? You don't have any talent. You know, it's just their husband's unhappiness speaking out and lashing out at their wives to sit and, you know, to criticize them. And I also think that a lot of our women have very controlling husbands because of the fact that their sexuality is out of control, that the way they try to hide things is by being controlling. You know, they feel they have no control over their sexuality, so they try to control everything around it so that nothing gets out and that nobody finds out. And they just become extremely controlling in what they do. And I think when you live with someone who's controlling, that also emotionally strips you down to where you can't make decisions for yourself because it's that old term, walking on eggshells. You don't want to do anything to upset that apple cart and make your husband angry at you. You know, you're trying to make him happy and you're trying not to have conflict and you're trying for him not to be calling you names and accusing you of all kinds of things. And so you just try to keep everything, you know, very calm and peaceful so you don't stand up for yourself anymore. You kind of just base your life around trying to make him happy and doing whatever it makes him happy because you're just feeling if he'll be happy, then you can be happy.
It's called dancing inside the circle of crazy. That's what all that is. That's what you just described. And, you know, to bring back another point, I do believe that you're accurate with the controlling part, how so many of them become so controlling because their life just seems so out of control. And I certainly believe that's where, you know, looking back, reflecting back over the years, I believe that's where the domestic violence stemmed from, him just trying to control our world, like forcing me to stay there. And I believe with him, and certainly I'm not saying, I've said this before, I'll say it again, all gay men married to straight women are not abusive. You know, they're not physically abusive. My marriage is a little bit different, had an extra layer of complication added to it due to the domestic violence. So, you know, I do believe him feeling like his life was out of control made him more aggressive. And I can see how that, looking back now, how that, you know, because I know more now. You know, hindsight is always 20/20, as they say. I know more now than I knew then. I could see when it started unraveling, it became worse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it became worse. So, you know, his world was crashing down, I suppose. You know, the facade he had built was starting to crumble.
You know, one thing I think I've learned a lot in the last number of years of doing this is that no two situations are exactly the same, even though the emotional input from every situation is exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I have women who write to me each week with different fears, different apprehensions. What if I'm wrong? What if I'm wrong? You know, mm-hmm. my husband, you know, maybe he's not gay. Maybe I'm imagining it. Or how distressing it is for some women. We have one woman who's part of our support network who, you know, I feel my heart goes out to her. But I get letters like this a lot from women whose husbands, who they know they're gay, and the marriage ends, and then they're out there finding another woman and having children with her.
I knew where you were going to lead with that because I was wanting to bring up that topic. It's so true. And, you know, and I'm going to use this intuition word again. My intuition has never failed me. I have failed listening to my intuition. So all you women out there, just like our guest, I think she brought up intuition last week, how she mentioned that, you know, she didn't trust her intuition. You know, trust your intuition and know in your heart. And your intuition is a big enough answer if you didn't find proof.
Mm-hmm.
If women search for proof, especially when these gay men remarry. And, you know, sometimes they'll even have additional children or, you know, create another family or remarry, you know, just depending on what age they are. And it's just so devastating to the straight wife because she will question herself even more. Did I do the right thing? What are other people thinking? What is he saying to other people? You know, number one, don't care what he's saying to other people. Number two, just get down and kiss the ground that you may get your life back on track because you're divorced now. And trust
Well, that's a really good point, Misty, because so many women are so worried, well, how's it going to look if I say he was gay and here he goes out and marries someone else and has babies with her? And I have women write that to me all the time. I would say at least two or three women each week send me that story. And I tell them it doesn't matter what he does. What matters is let it be someone else's problem. It's a terrible thing to say. Because she's not going to be any happier with him than you are, because
yeah.
she's going to live that same experience that you lived. He's not going to become straight for her.
No, he's not.
Any more than
not
he became straight for you.
Exactly. He's just, this person is still continuing. They're so unrest being gay that they don't know how to handle it, whether it's religious pressures, where it's where they live, you know, whether they're a prominent citizen in the community. And, you know, we have that happen a lot. You know, they have to have that marriage to look like they're, you know, to feel like they're normal. And it's a shame because, you know, being homosexual does not make you unnormal. You know, you can live outside the closet and be a very normal person. But I think that just they have to have that to feel like, I don't know, feel like they're complete or like everyone else. I'm not for sure why it is. I can't answer that, all that. But it just makes the straight wife feel so, like such a failure. And I see the straight wives questioning themselves even more when that ex-husband remarries and partners up with another female. And like you just said, it's so important to know that person, that straight wife's not going to make the husband straight again. Trust your intuition. You know what you know. I have never had a woman of all the women I've worked with coaching and providing, you know, counseling through this process, have ever falsely accused her husband of being gay and turned out to be wrong. I've never had that happen.
Me either. And that's why I say I don't have straight women coming to me with straight husbands and saying, I think my husband's gay. They may say to me, I think my husband's cheating or being unfaithful.
Right.
But gay is not the issue. And another thing that I just wanted to mention also, because I have a number of women who write to me about this, not as many as the last issue, but certainly at least one or two each week, who write to me about sexual addictions or cross-dressing or any kind of other sexual types of things that are off from, you know, the normal path. And once again, not being judgmental, because I'm not trying to judge anyone, but I don't think it really matters what it is. If you're not comfortable with it, then you need to leave it. And these kinds of addictions, like, for instance, you know, with sexual addictions, can they be treated, I guess. You know, are they successful? I guess there's one out of every 50, just like any other kind of addiction that's successful. But, you know, there's so much more lack of success than there is success when treating sexual addictions. And there has to be such a willingness, you know, on the part of the person, not just the wife's part. You know, the wives want it, but the husbands have to want it.
Mm-hmm.
It takes so much hard work, medication, you know, willingness to give this up. And, you know, in the end, you end up, in most cases, losing that battle. And you can't personalize it has anything to do with you, because sexual addiction, like every other addiction, now that is a mental type of disorder, as opposed to homosexuality, which is definitely not a mental disorder. But
mm-hmm.
addictions, that they are disorders, whether it's a sexual addiction, drug addiction, food addiction, smoking addiction, gambling addiction, you know, any kind of addiction. And with sexual addictions, they had to take all kinds of forms. You know, like one lady wrote to me tonight that she thinks her husband's a cross-dresser. And I wrote to her, just be aware of the fact that 90% of all cross-dressers are not gay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fact that they're not gay doesn't make me feel any better about wanting to be with someone who's a cross-dresser. And yet for other women, it doesn't matter at all. You know, it doesn't bother them. And
mm-hmm.
I say, if it doesn't bother you, if you want to share your clothes with your husband and have him dress up, you know, and not even, you know, be fazed by it, I don't judge you. I think that's great if that's what you can deal with. I just couldn't. You know, it's just not who I am. And I don't want to have to change to have to live with someone's addiction. How do you feel about that, Misty?
I'm going to put that in the same category you just did. Any type of addiction, I don't think I could live with in a partner. Because, you know, being a therapist, I work with people that have addictions in all areas. And whether it be a sexual addiction, substance abuse, illegal substance, prescription substance, alcoholism, gambling, sex, sexual addiction, whatever that addiction is. Number one, you have to have so much commitment on part of the person that's addicted to whatever thing they're addicted to commit to such a high level, an intense level of treatment. And it can be so exhausting. I admire a couple that can stay together and through that, and then willing to try that. But personally, myself, it's hard.
It's very difficult.
I mean,
you know what, with sexual addictions,
hard.
I think sexual addictions is much harder. I mean,
I
gambling is tough.
That.
You know, you can lose your house. I'm not saying no. Drugs are horrible because certainly, you know, I faced that in my life with my own daughter and lost her to her addiction. You know, so believe me, my heart goes out to anyone dealing with drugs, dealing with gambling. But, you know, with the sexual addiction, there's like, it's more than just having an addiction. It's the infidelity constantly. You know that somebody's out there cheating, right?
And the dangers that come along with a sexual addiction is so high.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when someone has a sexual addiction, they usually they don't care if they're protected. They don't, you know, they're not going to wait, you know, a couple weeks to have, you know, STDs, medical tests run on a potential partner to see if they have anything. You know, you're going to have the sex right then, right there. You have that. It's sexual addiction, so, I mean, you just got to have it. So, I mean, it's the dangers they put themselves in, you know, with certain STDs. And as we know, some STDs are not curable. Some STDs can even bring on, you know, life-threatening illnesses. So, I mean, it's just the dangers that come along with that. You're really exposing yourself.
And you know who I feel
like
really
this?
Sorry for, Misty? I mean, I feel really even bad having to discuss this, but there are some women out there, and they need to hear this. There are those women who have husbands who are out there cheating on them with either, you know, all kinds of things or with just men. And yet they're still having unprotected sex with their husbands because they want to show their husbands that they trust them or they really love them or they're not going to let anything, you know, stop them from loving them.
Mm-hmm.
You know the kind of women I'm talking about?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I say, I don't care if you even think that your husband could be gay, you have to have protected sex. And by
mm-hmm.
sex, I don't mean birth control pills. I mean condoms. I mean just flat out. you have to use it because you don't know. You know, if your husband's gone out with you before, and some women know that their husbands have gone out with them with other men. A lot of men do not use protection. You know, the AIDS scare, it's not there like it was before, meaning, you know, in the 80s, everyone was scared to death. They'd be using protection. You know, I think there was a higher use of protection. And now I think people have sort of let that go to the wayside because it's just not right up in their face anymore, you know.
Well, you know what it is? They think that because you can treat it with medication, that it's not the same, you know, problem that it used to be. And to a great extent, that is true. People don't die from AIDS the way they used to. But believe me, I wouldn't want to have to deal with it at all and have it. And
exactly.
A number of our women not only have AIDS, but they have gonorrhea, syphilis, the HPV the virus, you know, for cancer.
Mm-hmm.
They have herpes. They have crabs. They have all kinds of sexually transmitted diseases, some of which can be resolved and some of which never will be. So,
exactly.
I mean, is it worth it to prove anything to anyone? I mean, you know, if you have to be at that point of your life where you have to prove something to a husband that you know he's cheating on you, that, you know, you trust him and that, you know, you think he's going to love you more for allowing you to do this, then you're really the one with the problem, not your husband. We know what he is. But you have to see yourself as the one who has the problem and look to get support and help for that. Because, you know, doing that, you're only hurting you. You're not helping your relationship. It's not like your husband's going to say, what a great wife she is. She knows that I'm out there cheating and still she's willing to have unprotected sex with me. I mean, you know, life is not supposed to be like this. And that's where I think, like you say, Misty, you get caught up dancing in that circle of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so many things just, you know, get so out of control. We do have a caller who would like to join us, so let's see who's calling us tonight. Hold on just one moment. And we'll see who's calling us. Hello?
Hello, Bonnie and Misty. This is Maggie.
Hi, Maggie. Thanks so much for calling in. We were kind of hoping on a holiday you would.
Yeah, I've been sitting here listening to the show so far, and just all I can do is shake my head.
I know. It's really sad when you think about it, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, I actually was sitting here taking notes about all the different points that you were making and my feelings on them. I mean, like the whole thing with Joe Court. The man is a quack. Pure.
Uh-huh.
You know, and when he says that women rarely marry gay men accidentally, I am sitting there thinking, excuse me? My ex-husband was the son of a Southern Baptist preacher. So he is absolutely the last person on earth I would ever have suspected was gay. You know, so to say that, you know, I didn't marry a gay man by accident, I mean, that's a slap in the face to me, you know, as an individual. I was reading another article on his website where he was talking and wrote about a couple that I think had decided to try to stay married, although the husband had a boyfriend on the side, and he said, you know, that the wife was just going to, they were going to have to sit down and discuss this, and she was just going to have to accept this. And I thought, if the husband was having an affair with another woman, would they even be having that discussion? You know,
exactly.
It seems like such a hypocritical thing. You know, he's trying to legitimize this whole thing of gay men marrying straight women and it being okay, and it's not okay. The letter that the woman wrote where she talked about it being fraud, I mean, that's exactly what it is. I mean, adultery is basically breach of contract. You might get married in the church, but marriage is governed by the state because you've got to go to the state to get a divorce. So, you know, when a man commits adultery or a woman commits adultery, it doesn't matter which one it is, I mean, that's a breach of that marriage contract, a breach of a legal contract. And, you know, like I said, I've just been sitting here shaking my head over all this. I thought it was interesting, too, in the article where he talked about in a mixed orientation marriage that at the 7-year mark is when things will start happening, and I thought that there's that 7-year itch. You know, the same as in heterosexual marriages. I just read an article this week where they said that while the divorce rate overall was dropping, the 7-year itch still existed. And
well, he has a one of his websites called Straight Guys. I don't know if you came across that yet, Maggie. And Guys is spelled G-U-I-S-E. And it says that it's not a gay thing, it's a guy thing. Straight Guys is about straight men who have sex with men, who question their sexual orientation and are not gay. It is about the many reasons men engage in sexual contact with other men that are not about a homosexual identity. Straight men cannot become gay, and gay men cannot become straight. Gay men are not gay due to the complicated childhood experiences such as sexual abuse or problematic parenting. Science is increasingly pointing to the evidence that gay men are born that way. There is a significant difference between sexual identity, sexual behavior, and sexual fantasy. Straight Guys helps teach what these are. It says, written from Dr. Joe Court's perspective as an openly gay psychotherapist who has counseled thousands of sexually confused men over the years, Straight Guys shows how this phenomenon crosses all ethnicities and cultures. Not a week goes by when I don't receive distressed emails or phone calls from heterosexual men who worry they might be gay and from wives who have discovered their husbands engaged in gay hookups and relationships or exploring gay porn. Straight Guys intends to help readers just as I have helped my clients, first by separating the two types of men in the world. There are men who are gay and bisexual, and then there are heterosexual men who seek out sex with other men. The difference is one of sexual preference versus sexual identity. Sexual preferences are about various desires, positions, and fantasies one has, whereas sexual identity is about how one self-identifies in terms of straight, gay, or bisexual. Straight Guys is not about reparative therapy, which is harmful. It's not a site about pathologizing straight men who have sex with men. It's focused on understanding and differentiating sexual orientation, sexual acting out, normal sexual interest heterosexual men have in sexual contact with other men. And that's what, you know, I guess he has this book out, Straight Guys. Now, he says, reasons straight men have, on his website here, straightguys.com, he has reasons why straight men have sex with other men. Okay, so here's a list of them. First, let's see, sexual abuse, and about that, let's see what he says. Because, you know, I'm sitting here with my mouth open, by the way. Approximately 1 in 6 boys is sexually abused before the age of 16. Often males who have been sexually traumatized and or abused behaviorally act out of homosexuality, also known as homosexual imprinting. Some of these males are gay and most are not. Males who have been sexually abused are often confused as to their sexual orientation because of the trauma. These men, both gay and straight, reenact the trauma through the homosexual behavior as adults. I have written significantly on the effects of same-sex sexual abuse by males to male children. I've debunked the myth that as an adult male, sexually abusing a male child is about homosexuality. It is not. It's about pedophilia, power, and abuse, none of which have been included in what it means to be an adult gay man. An adult gay male, gay, straight, or bisexual, can be a pedophile. However, being a pedophile does not indicate the perpetrator's orientation. If a man sexually abuses a female child, we want to believe that he must be a heterosexual, but this is not always the case. Most pedophiles are attracted to children, not adults. Likewise, just because a male perpetrator sexually abuses a male child does not indicate he's gay. All right. Well, you know, okay, I understand that. I still don't understand where that, you know, you'd be confused later on if you're straight. Okay.
It's kind of all over the place. I mean, you know, some of the stuff, you know, I agree that he's right with. I mean, pedophilia and homosexuality are two entirely different things, and one doesn't necessarily mean the other. But this whole thing about, you know, the difference between sexual identity and sexual orientation, and you can be straight and yet be interested in men. I mean, I have one word for that, and it's bullshit.
Is that one word or two? Oh, yeah, that's one word.
I think it's one word, yeah.
I think in the South we call that one word. It's one word in the South, Bonnie, one word.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's fine.
One word.
No,
yeah,
I agree with you. I just don't get it. I don't care what your sexual orientation or your sexual preference is. You want a man, it's gay. I don't care how much you love your wife. I don't care if you have children. I don't care if you're having sex with your wife. If you want to have sex with a man, like
you're
he
having
says,
sex with man, yeah.
Like
then
he
you're
says,
gay.
Like here's some of the other reasons for men to have sex with men: sex for money, men seeking intensely arousing but shameful experiences, high sex drive, availability and opportunity, father hunger, narcissism, sexual addictions, exhibitionists, voyeurs, and hazing. And that may be true, but I still have fetishism. Then he comes up with this homosexual obsessive-compulsive disorder. Have you heard of that one, either one of you?
Never heard of that.
Yeah, he came up with this theory of homosexual obsessive-compulsive disorder. And it says you feel more sexually aroused by people of the opposite sex. You feel more sexually aroused by people of the same sex. Your thoughts about engaging in same-sex relationships are unappealing to you. Now, he goes through a whole list. But he considers that many times that homosexuality is another form of obsessive-compulsive disorder. So, I mean, he comes up with his own stuff that makes people feel better about themselves because it doesn't mean they have to be gay. And I don't think that being gay, you should feel anything is wrong with yourself. But what he's doing is he's making people feel justified that they're really not gay, even though they go out and have gay sex. But, you know,
I mean, and he's trying to legitimize the whole, you know, being gay and married to a straight woman thing.
Right.
And that,
there's nothing wrong with it, you know, because you can be heterosexual and be having sex with men. And I've had men who have gone to him for counseling, you know, charges them $100 an hour on the phone or more, $150, to convince them that it's okay, you're not really gay, you're just straight and you have these sexual occasional needs, but you truly are a heterosexual. And they feel much better. They're willing to pay for that.
Yeah, I mean, the first therapist that my ex-husband went to basically told him the same thing. He went to this psychologist and said, you know, that he thought he was gay. And the man said, you know, after like 6 weeks of therapy, said, you know, I don't think you're gay. I think you just need to go home and have sex with your wife, and that will solve everything. And, I mean, that sexual encounter is still very clear in my mind because it was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And my ex-husband later told me, he said, at that point, I knew for sure that I was gay.
Well, you know, and how old was he then?
58 or 59. No, he was about 55, 56, something like that. Although he had suspected since he was a teenager that he was gay.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, back in the 70s, there was still this sort of prevailing school of thought that, you know, if you got married, that would cure it, quote unquote, cure it. And then again, like I said, he grew up in a very conservative religious family, so, you know, he couldn't come out to his family.
Did he ever tell you he felt trapped when you were married to him?
Now, he never said that.
Mm-hmm.
He never said that. You know, and I was going to say, in a way, I feel sorry for him. Because I cannot imagine anything closer to hell on earth than being born gay into a Southern Baptist family where your daddy is the preacher.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing wrong with being gay. That's the way God made you. But to drag a woman into it, you know, that's where the wrong part comes. You know, and that's always been my issue, is, you know, the fact that, you know, he deceived me for so long and, he cheated on me. And you were talking about, you know, the sexually transmitted diseases. I mean, my ex is HIV positive because he got drunk and with another married man. And he thought, well, because this guy is married, he's safe.
I think that you and I would probably agree on this because, you know, here's where, you know, my dividing line is. I think you and I agree on the fact that we are sympathetic. You know, our hearts do go out to these men who are forced to live, you know, they feel just compelled. They don't want to be gay, so they get married. I think they do marry us with the intention that hopefully everything will be fine if they marry us. And I can go along with all that, but then where the dividing line becomes dividing for me is when they're out there cheating on you. Because at that point, they're not questioning their sexuality anymore. At that point, they're acting on their sexuality, which is a lot different than questioning it, right?
I think that's one of the big differences between Dr. Olson and Joe Court is this whole matter of intent. You know, Olson says they don't necessarily intend to hurt, you know, the woman. You know, they just... they're not sure what to do, and they're thinking this is going to solve the problem. So there's not a specific intent to hurt. But, you know, with courts, you know, telling this couple, you know, well, you know, your husband's going to have sex with other men, and you all just need to sit down and talk about it and work it all out, you know. Like you said, that's the dividing line right there. And that's where I stopped feeling sorry for him.
Right, I agree with you. I feel that, you know, that's why the whole terminology of bisexuality, you know, I always tell people I don't believe in bisexuality. I believe that it's a passageway that, you know, for some men who believe they're emotionally attached to a woman but having sex with a man, the point remains if you were truly bisexual, you know, I could believe in it more if you were truly bisexual and you could go with either a man or a woman and you fall in love with a woman, then why are you cheating on her with a man? You know, it's the same thing. You know, to me, it doesn't make a difference. You can call yourself whatever you want to, but then if you can't be satisfied with the person you're living with and you have to be cheating with somebody of the same sex, then to me, that is not being bisexual. That's also infidelity, and you're gay.
Yeah.
It's just that people justify it.
My ex called himself bisexual for a while, and I think that was his, you know, he did that before he could, you know, come to grips with calling himself gay. You know?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of men really have a difficult time.
A little more acceptable, you know. I don't know.
And I wouldn't mind people calling themselves bisexual. They say, I'm bisexual and I want a penis. You know, then at least they're being open and they're being honest. And then you can say, well, then go get one because I don't want you. But the point is that, you know, when you're giving people false hope, and saying I'm bisexual, so many women who are married to men who call themselves bisexual think that they have to keep trying harder and harder to keep them, their men from not being attracted to men. And I think all three of us on this line know that's just not going to be happening. Maggie, can we talk a little bit about your wonderful blog that you have?
Sure.
Yeah, maybe you can tell our listeners how they can get, you know, access to it, because you have a beautiful new blog, you know, for straight wives, where you're making, you know, really, really heartfelt comments on there for people to think about. And I know that the women that, you know, have written to me who have read your blog are just so impressed with it and feel so supported by it. So maybe you can talk a little bit about it.
Well, it's kind of been a long time in coming. It's something I wanted to do for a while, but I sort of had to get to the place emotionally where I could be objective enough that it wasn't just a giant bitch fest. Although I do a little bit of that too, but the website is it's kind of funky. It's STR and the number 8 talk and then the number 4 women .blogspot.com. So STR number 8. TALK and then the number 4 women.blogspot.com.
And if you can't get that all down, just write to me at bondk@AOL asking for Maggie's blog site and I'll send you a direct link. I'm sorry, go ahead, Maggie.
And I've just sort of blogged about, you know, I put a thing up about your book and you know, I've talked about that closed loop group that you've mentioned in the chats about, you know, and it's basically a bunch of men who say, you know, oh, I still love my wife, but I want to have sex with men, and you know, and I think that the title of my post on that was Your Cheating Heart, and
Yeah, I think a lot of women don't know about the Closed Loop Group, and I think it was new to you when I told you about it. But this is an organization that just really makes me want to throw up. You know, I find them extremely repulsive because, you know, it's like an organized how do I cheat on my wife group. I mean, they don't even have any pretense of pretending not to.
And there was a whole post on there about, you know, how to be very careful when you were surfing to gay sites, you know, about cleaning out your cache and you know, and that was one of the things that I always, I mean, I kind of thought it was weird that my husband had this software. I mean, I had the same software on my computer. It was a software that cleans your cache and cleans out your history and everything. I would run it periodically. He had it set up so that every time he closed down Internet Explorer, it would automatically run. And, of course, now I know why. You know, it was because he was hiding where he had been online.
Well, the whole pretext of this closed-loop group, in theory now, not in reality, was that if you're a gay man and you're married, then you should have one close relationship with a man that your wife knows about, and that's the loop where it's closed. You know, your wife, you, and the lover. And that the wife, you know, you're honest with the wife when you're seeing this guy and there's nobody else involved, so there's no problems as far as, you know, sexual diseases or whatever, it's transmitted diseases. And in theory, you know, it sounds very nice and polite. I mean, not for me, but I guess for someone. And
I guess, but you're saying more power to you. But
yeah, it's not our thing, but, you know, maybe it's somebody's thing. But the thing is that's the theory, but in practicality what it is, you know, most of these guys never tell their wives. You know, they're just out there picking up other men online, you know, and there's no closed loop. They're out there, you know, like I say, encouraging other men to have relationships. And teaching them how to, you know, protect themselves from their wives ever finding out by giving them advice on how to clean out their computer.
Yeah,
and
teaching them how to
see a lot of wife bashing on there, too, about the men complaining about their wives a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
giving different ways that people could cheat on them.
Yeah, I found it very sickening. Very.
Absolutely. I think that's a group that really, you know, for a while I was following them, and then I just, you know, gave it up because it just made me too ill. You know, I've written about them before, and they've really condemned me and knocked me, but that's okay. I don't mind. You know, when people like that condemn you, I think you're in good shape, right?
That's right.
Right. I don't have to be loved by these organizations. Exactly. So you write about relevant issues that come up in your own experiences. And, you know, Maggie's a beautiful writer, so if you need some extra support over and above what we have to offer as far as our support group and my newsletters, you know, Maggie's on a regular basis blogging on there. So feel free to write to me at bondk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to send you a direct link to Maggie's blog in case you didn't have time to write down all that information.
Most of the website visitors have been from the U.S., but I've had several from different European countries and one from New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, because, you know, we have women all over the world, you know, who are part of the support network.
Yeah, this phenomenon is not, you know, restricted to any one country or race or creed or, you know, I think it's
universal.
It's universal. That's right. And the blog for me has been a bit of an outlet. Missy was talking about how when she was going through you know, the latter part of her marriage, about how her creativity was stifled, and I've had that happen to me too. I haven't been able to write any fiction.
Mm-hmm.
I sit down and the words just won't come. So doing the blog, you know, it's not fiction at all. It's, unfortunately, it's sadly the truth.
It's kind of
given me a bit of an outlet.
Yeah.
And I think that writing and art, you know, definitely are outlets. And it kind of reminds me of a story I read when I was younger. Well, not young, but younger, by Alice Walker, you know, who wrote The Color Purple. And she has a story out called In My Mother's Garden. And I don't know if either one of you are familiar with that story. But I always think to that story when I think about my own life, because this goes back to when her mother was growing up in the South and through the years of slavery, how, you know, black people in this country were really enslaved and not allowed to express, you know, their creativity and their artistic ways, and how her mother, once, you know, they were free and they had their own little house, and how she grew this beautiful garden. And she thought about all the years, you know, through her family's lives where they weren't allowed to express their artistic ways. And, you know, because they were threatened if they were. And I think to a lot of our wives also, it's the same thing, who we could have been if we had the right kinds of encouragement and support for those of our women who have artistic, you know, talents, whether it be in the field of music or writing or singing or doing beautiful artwork like Misty does, you know, and creating beautiful artwork, that, you know, we wouldn't have had all those years of, you know, being suppressed and feeling that we had to keep making our husbands happy instead of ourselves. You know, who knows what we could have created by now. Do you feel the same about that, ladies?
Wow, I got a comment for that. Certainly I don't want to compare my marriage to the throes of being a slave whatsoever, but I will say I can understand, you know, just being so stifled. And, you know, when, you know, we unfortunately, you know, slaves, it was just, it was about survival. It's just such an unjust situation. Just unimaginable is all I can say, unimaginable what those people walk, the shoes they walk through. And looking at my own marriage, I was in survival. So, I mean, there was no time for the extra things. There was no time for art. There was no time to feel like I was living. There was no time to do things I enjoyed. I was surviving. I was surviving.
Or would you say, Misty, there was no time to create beauty when you didn't feel anything beautiful around you?
There was nothing beautiful around me. My life was a mess. It was a complete mess. I was constantly trying to clean up the mess. So I had no time to practice my creativity. I had no time. I had no time to enjoy life. I had no time to even know who I was. I mean, it was day by day I was becoming more drained. And when you're drained, you become more empty. It was becoming more empty day by day. And it was a struggle. Sometimes it was a struggle day by day. Sometimes it was a struggle to get through an hour at a time when it was intense. So, you know, you would just take it moment by moment. And when you're in that survival mode, there's no time for creativity. So, I mean,
how do you feel about that, Maggie? Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely, and what makes me, you know, so angry is the fact that as a writer, I was really sort of beginning to hit my stride. I had had some success with writing. I had sold some short stories. I had written my first book. I had had a request for that book, and that all happened right about the time that I found out that my husband was gay, and it was like this. You know, it was like running into a brick wall. And, you know, I mean, the success, the little bit of success that I had had with the writing had built up my self-esteem. I had always had self-esteem problems. And so I was beginning to really feel good about myself, you know, because this was something that I had done on my own. I mean, it was all mine. And then, you know, this whole gay thing and the divorce thing, you know, And so it's been a struggle to fight back from that and to come back and figure out, you know, who I am independent of my husband and you know, develop, you know, my own identity again as a single woman. You know, I mean, I just turned 60. That's a hell of an age to be sitting out on your own, but, you know. But,
right, and you didn't expect that at this stage of the game of your life, I'm sure through all those years, that you'd have to be starting over. And it's not so much even a matter of, you know, the marriage is stifling us from what we could be doing creatively, but in the aftermath of the marriage is trying to put our lives back together. I think also there's a period of time when you can't really think very creatively because you're trying to wonder where you're going to be living next, what kind of job you have to now get if you haven't worked for a while, how you're going to support yourself, how you're going to be a single parent. You know, so I don't think it's like you automatically go, okay, I'm free, now let me get back to my artistic talent. I think sometimes that takes time. Would you both agree on that?
Yeah, like Misty was saying, you know, you're in survival mode. And when you're in survival mode, that's the only thing you can think about is, you know, how am I going to get through this? You know, what am I going to do?
And that can last a while, right? It doesn't just go away after a few months.
Yeah,
so
right.
I think sometimes it takes time so we can, you know, bring back our creative juices. We have to get everything else in our lives in order.
Well, once you go through the survival mode, hopefully eventually you start passing through the, you know, at some point in that time you will start grieving. And, you know, that's pretty exhausting as well. You grieve what was, what should have been, what could have been, and you grieve your future. So, you know, don't forget that process either. It's very taxing on the straight wife.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I blogged about, was the whole grieving process, the stages of grieving. You know, because I've gone through some of those. You know, I'm still very much in the anger stage about what has happened. You know, I mean, I see my ex-husband and his boyfriend, and they're moving on and madly in love, and you know, and I'm trying to pull my life together and trying to figure out, you know, just what in the world am I going to do?
The road to gay hosting and recovery is a long road. You know, it just doesn't happen in a day, a month, or a year.
It doesn't happen in a day. And I really get angry with people, when people look at me and say, well, you need to just get over it.
I just want to
slam them and say, you know, how do you just get over finding out that the last 37 years of your life was a lie? You know,
that easily comes, and that's why for our women, I always tell them, there's no timeline on this. You know what the different stages are. And in fact, in the new book that I have out with Doug called Over the Cliff, you know, Gay Men and Straight Marriages, I have a whole chapter on there on the grieving phases that women go through, you know, for straight wives coming out of a marriage. And I thought it was really important that these gay husbands understand this and what the different phases that we go through, to give them some kind of a guideline so that they don't say in 2 weeks after they tell us, well, you've had time to absorb this, now it's time to move on. It just doesn't work that way.
Absolutely.
You know, this is a process. And, you know, the anger stage often, you know, fluctuates coming back and forth. But, you know, you think you have it resolved, and then all of a sudden something else hits you. And you realize,
you know, 99 days out of 100, I'm pretty good. You know, I've got a nice place to live. I've got wonderfully supportive friends and family, and you know, I'm trying to move on. But it's that one day out of 100 where something will happen, and it just slaps me upside the head, and I think, how the hell did I get here? You know, how
did
this happen to me?
Grief. That's a notorious process of grief. You know, it's called a wave of grief. It's going to happen. You know, it's like a dance. You take 3 steps forward, and some days you're going to take a step back. But the good part about grief, if you continue to work on, you know, becoming whole, becoming who you are, and healing yourself, whatever it takes for you to heal yourself, when you experience those waves of grief, they should be shorter, and they should be farther spaced. There should be better time, more days that are great than 4 days
of bad. I've seen that happen with myself, so you're absolutely right. I've seen that happen with myself. It's kind of like a roller coaster where at the beginning,
it is.
You know, it's really steep, you know, pull up and a really steep drop. But, you know, the further you get into it, you know, it begins to level out, and it's still pretty bumpy.
And grief is unpredictable. We think we can predict it and put it in a nice little package. You can't. Give it up. You know, it's predictable. There's going to be days it's just going to smack you upside the head, I think, like you said. I mean, and you don't know which days those are going to be. You can count on them probably being holidays and significant events, you know, in the marriage that were significant, those dates. But, you know, other days in between, they can just, it's unpredictable when they hit.
Well, I think a lot of it depends on your situation, because, you know, if you have young children that you're raising as a single parent now, and you're overwhelmed, and now all of a sudden all the responsibility is on you, I think that anger takes longer to, you know, or comes back more often when you really feel frustrated and trapped, because, you know, you weren't planning on having to do this, and you're not financially in a position to be able to give your children or have the things that you once had. And if you have a husband who's not responsible to you and who ignores the fact that, you know, you have needs and the children have needs, I think that anger stays longer. I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, how your husbands are, that you can heal sooner if they're more responsible to you as husbands when they leave the marriage.
Absolutely. That goes back to the survival, you know, being in survival stage, because if you're experiencing the grief and having to remain in survival, it's going to take much longer for you to pass through those phases.
Mm-hmm.
Much longer. much longer because you're too worried about surviving. You know, the grief has to go on a back burner. So, you know, you are going to experience those phases longer. Absolutely.
Because I don't think you have the opportunity to really, you know, work through them because you haven't even had a chance to even think about them because, like you say, you're still in your survival mode.
Exactly.
That you don't really have a chance to grieve properly. You know, you're just trying to get through each day.
Mm-hmm.
But now tell people how long it's been for you since you, you know, found out.
How long is it for me? Has it been?
Yeah.
About 2.5 years since I got my first inkling that he was gay.
Okay.
And then I moved out of the house about a year and a half ago. So.
Okay. So, I mean, it's still relatively new for you. But, you know, it's got to this point and it's taken at least, you know, a year and a half to 2 years. So for women who are just coming out of their marriages or just finding out now, you know, it does take its time. I would say at least the first year, you know, when you go through any kind of grieving period, you know,
right.
It takes at least a year from to move from, you know, the shock phase to get over to, you know, past some of the anger into getting into some kind of acceptance. It doesn't mean that everything's fine, but at least, you know, time is to some extent a healer, you know, if you give yourself the time you need to figure it all out, I would say.
Absolutely. And things, as time goes, as long as you're not stuck in a grief, you know, something to do with your grief situation, as long as you're not stuck, and when you're stuck, you're just repeating and ruminating of the past. I mean, you can really identify being stuck when you just cannot get out of letting something go. And if you're doing that, I mean, it's okay to do that for a while. But if you find yourself years later, you're continuing to do that, I think it's safe to say you're stuck in a pattern, meaning, you know, if you're stopping yourself from moving forward in your own life and you're dwelling on your past, that's not healthy for you. You really
Well, that's when a lot of times the anger turns to bitterness if you can't work it out. And when,
exactly.
You know, anger, I think, is a very healthy thing because it means you're standing up and
it
fighting
is.
Back. But when you're bitter, then that's really when you're internalizing and hurting yourself.
That's
you can't have any kind of objectivity. And
exactly.
You can't think straight. And you're still living in your own circle of crazy and can't get out of it. And that's why it's really important for women to have a vehicle. That's why when Maggie has her support blog, where we have our support group meetings online, I always encourage women, you know, some women say, well, you know, in your support group, a lot of people are angry. Well, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with venting in the support group. I'd rather you support, you know, vent there than vent at home in front of your children or, you know, internalize it, not be able to say what's on your mind. You know, venting is good. Venting is what gets us to the next stage of getting past that anger.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, ladies, we're running out of time, and I just wanted Maggie to thank you so much and hope you'll continue to call in because you're more than a guest. You're like a co-hostess with us. And, you know, sharing your experiences, you know, it's always wonderful to hear what you have to say. And once again, if you would like to get the email address for, or the web address for Maggie's blog, feel free to, you know, write to me if you didn't get it. Maggie, say it one more time for them before we hang up.
It's STR and the number 8, TALK and the number 4, women.blogspot.com.
Okay, so that's like straight talk for women, but with the 8
straight
and the 4 in there.
Straight talk for women, but using the 8 and the 4,
And it's a beautiful, beautiful site. That takes a lot of creativity. I just like to look at it. You two are truly artists, you and Misty. You know, I always admire art, as I do with some of our other members that just do beautiful work. Misty, are you off from work tomorrow?
Oh, no, I will be working tomorrow.
Oh, well, I'm sorry we kept you up so late.
That's okay.
But I guess you're used to it by now, right?
I'm
for all of our people who are off tomorrow, who don't have crazy jobs, I want to wish you the happiest Memorial Day. And remember what this holiday is truly about, remembering those who fought for our country and who died, you know, fighting for our freedom. And we admire anybody who has family in the military. And for all of our women, we hope you have a peaceful week. Next week, we will have Dr. Lauren Olson back on to sit and discuss his book, Finally Out. And I know that will be a really interesting discussion. So maybe, Maggie, you'll think about joining us next week with some questions for Dr. Olson as you're listening. Maybe, right?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. No, feel free to call.
I'll be listening.
All right. Good. And we'll talk to you all. And Misty, you can say goodnight to everyone.
Yes. I'd briefly like to say, in honor of Memorial Day, thanks for bringing that up. And I'd like to dedicate my portion of the show to my wonderful grandfather, that has now passed, John Robert Rowe. He certainly served our country in a wonderful way, and was a wonderful male influence in my life. And I would like to say goodnight and love to all.
So all. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. Bye.